This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Hello. Is aged care in Australia morphing into an airplane model, where some residents in a facility can be ushered to a first-class experience if they can pay their neighbour in the same facility, pushed to the economy end? Of course, we know not all aged care facilities are created equal. There are different standards between facilities depending, of course, on the price point. And I have been told that there have been some payments within some facilities for some services, but apparently not like we're seeing now. We're now seeing how at least one provider has interpreted the concept of higher everyday living fees that they are now allowed to introduce under the federal government's new Aged Care Act. Not so new anymore. It was put into place in November last year. Opal Healthcare, the biggest aged care residential provider in the country, is trialling a new two-tier system. If you don't pay extra, and when I mean extra, one example is reportedly $28 a day at one facility. If you can't pay that, you only get one hot meal option a day for either your lunch or dinner. If your neighbour can pay, they get a choice of three hot options at breakfast, two options at lunch, two at dinner. You get better desserts. You get better biscuits. You don't get access to free-to-air TV unless you pay. And TV sets are being unscrewed from the walls unless you sign up. What do you think? Is this okay? I'm Mary Guerin. This is The Conversation Hour. Thanks for joining me. I want to ask you, what do you think of this new fee? Is it playing out already in an aged care facility near you? People in the industry I've been talking to this morning haven't seen it in this stark an example, but maybe you already know about it. What's the line that we should draw with haves and have-nots in aged care? Maybe you think it's fair enough. There are always haves and have-nots. I'd love to hear from you. But also what we're going to explore today is how does someone in aged care, maybe with cognitive issues, very likely with cognitive issues, deal with suddenly losing choices, suddenly having inferior food options to their neighbour? Tell me what you are seeing and hearing with you, aged care places that you know of, where your loved ones are. We've asked Opal Healthcare to come and talk with us, but they gave us a statement and they said, under this act, the government has introduced these fees, and this is how they describe them, whereby older Australians who want more choice and have the means to pay for greater additional lifestyle, food and accommodation options themselves can do so. Is that fair enough? Is it just the way? People who can pay get those choices. People who can't, cannot. Or is having haves and have-nots within the same facility and presumably introduced pretty quickly if a facility wants to do it, is that a step too far? I'll be joined very soon by an ageing and healthcare expert for her assessment on the likely impact of that change on residents, if indeed it is being implemented beyond this. I'd love to know if you can tell me what you know. Also, do stick around because after that, we do have an absolutely lovely story about aged care, I promise you. It's a transformative choir for people with dementia and their loved ones. So we're going to be talking about not just the power of music to reach people sometimes when words can't, but also just how important it is to have that social connection. If you're caring or have cared for someone with dementia, how do you stay connected to your friends and your family? Have some of them fallen away? Let me know your experience. Or maybe you have got something in your life that has made you feel connected. Maybe you've started something like a choir. Maybe you have a friend who has dementia and you have made the extra effort because you know that they need that social connection. There's science behind that, and we'll talk about that a little later as well. But do you have that in your life, that social connection? How does one achieve that if you have someone in your life with dementia? Also, feel free to write to me about this or anything else. I'm on this email, conversationhour at abc.net.au. I'm going to come to your calls because you're already ringing in and your texts. I'd love to hear from you. But first, we're going to be talking to an expert about this new two-class system in aged care homes.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
It's coming up to 11 past 11. Well, we are talking about a big, in fact, the biggest private residential aged care provider, Opal Health. It has 154 facilities in total across a whole range of states. And we're talking about a trial that they're doing in at least four facilities that is about this new two-tier menu, no free TV. Lee Fay, Professor in Ageing and Health from Sydney University, joins me now. Hi, Lee Fay.
Morning, Mary.
What do you think about this trial and the details that we've discovered so far?
I'm really worried about the impact of this trial on the nutrition, on the dining experience of people in these facilities, the residents in these facilities, particularly those who are only getting the basic package.
And as far as you know, has this been done before to this extent? We know there are always haves and have-nots, but what's been your knowledge of what's been happening?
I mean, I haven't seen it done to this extent within one facility. Of course, there's some facilities where you pay higher fees and you've got a nicer building, nicer rooms, but I haven't experienced this where within one dining room, some residents are getting some choices of food and some residents don't have that option. I think that it really could be breaching the aged care standard on food and nutrition, where Opal is meant to make sure that they create a safe, appealing dining environment that the person likes. And if you're sitting there and you've got dementia and you want to eat the fish and chips that your neighbour's eating, but you're not allowed to have it, I don't think that's necessarily enjoyable or safe.
Yvonne from Portland has called in. Hi, Yvonne. What do you think?
I think it stinks. Fancy removing a TV from somebody. It only costs the power to run it in the room. And you took my television away from me, I would be absolutely devastated. And as far as I'm concerned, there's only one word that describes that. Bloody greed.
Yvonne, that is a good, strong comment. We know what Yvonne is thinking now. Before we go back to you, Lee Fay, I'm just going to take another couple of calls. Scott in Eltham, what do you think?
I find it very distressing to think that's happening to the elderly. And I often wonder, how does a country like Australia get in these situations? They're ageing people and quite a lot of them are wasting away anyway. So to take those meal choices away, I think it'll impact a lot of elderly really badly, and the TV, of course.
Yeah, you think mentally it's that effect apart from anything else?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's not a lot to do in some of those nursing homes, I would think, and some of the elderly may not have relatives that come and visit them, so that television's probably a bit of a lifeline too and keeps them motivated and thinking.
And thinking. Scott, thank you so much for that. Lee Fay, I think that underlines your fears as well as to the mental impact on residents.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, residential aged care are meant to be homes. This is where people live 24 hours a day, you know, probably for the rest of their life. It's not a cruise. It's not a hotel where maybe you pay more and you get better service. It's meant to be your home where you feel included and, you know, you're part of that community. And I think this is really making it feel much more like a hotel rather than a home.
I've got this on text from Terry. The care home where my wife is charging for a choice of meals, a quiet space, barista coffee when there's no machine in it, appears to be a charge for the offer of alcohol. A new resident who wasn't signed up was denied choice of meals and staff were threatening with being charged with theft and dismissed if they gave her food not paid for. Disgusting government for doing this. Leifé, we did get that statement from Opal Healthcare saying, look, this is all under what we have was introduced in the Aged Care Act. When I went onto the website this morning, it was quite vague in terms of what these fees could actually be connected to. What's your understanding of what it should be? Where is the line?
I mean, I think that you have to really interpret what the higher everyday living for your health can be charged for. Whether you can charge for, you know, free to air TV, for example, that's not clear. Facilities used to always charge extra for cable TV, your Foxtel, stuff like that. I think that was, and everyone found that acceptable. So it's whether, you know, whether people are charging for basic components of care. I think that's really the interpretation that we have to apply to each case.
Mm. I'm just looking again at the website. It says very briefly, you know, the health, as it's the acronym is, can be charged for services other than accommodation-related services that are of a higher standard than those on the service list, are not already required or listed on the list. And that's all it says there. And then when it gives examples under different types of agreements, it talks about Wi-Fi, yoga classes, haircut. I guess that's the sort of thing people might think, okay, fair enough. But is it hot meals?
I mean, from a clinical point of view, to provide nutritious food to people, you should be offering them choice. That's what the aged care standard means. And, you know, that and a safe environment. So I think that if you're not giving people choice in the safe environment, safe meaning, you know, you feel like you're lesser somehow than the person next to you, then you're not really meeting that standard of care.
Mm.
And so you can't charge extra to meet the standard of care. You have to meet the standard of care using the base fee.
Louise, your mum is in aged care.
Hello, is that me?
Yes, it is, Louise. It's you.
Yes, sorry. I have a loved one in aged care, not Opal, but another provider. This is being introduced where my mum is. It's quite appalling.
What sort of things is it being introduced for, Louise?
Okay, so a glass of wine, $9 if you're not on a particular package. The staff are only allowed to, if you're not on a particular package, you can't have any variety of tea. You can only have like the Lipton tea bag. So it's putting extra pressure on the staff. And I think it does set up a them and us for the different, for the residents who can't afford the extras.
Louise, I can see many, many people on text agreeing with you as well. Thank you for calling in. Phil in Seymour, what do you think?
I find this terrifying as a senior that's childless. I find it terrifying. But from my experience looking after parents, if you don't have an advocate, if you don't have somebody to speak up for you when you get old, you're in trouble. You're in serious trouble. I had my mother that I kept in her own home until she passed away, but just services and all the rest of it, if you don't have an advocate, you're in trouble. And I don't know what the government, what society can do about it, but you've got to have somebody that can speak up on your behalf when you become old and frail.
Phil, that is a really excellent point. Thank you for calling in. And I'll get to one more call before I go back to Leifé. Peter, you're calling in from Clyde, I think it is. Hi, Peter.
That's correct. Yes, 2 points. First of all, when my mother went into the aged care in Mornington, she was provided with various things and we thought that would be ongoing. Now she's going to have both TVs ripped out, the fridge ripped out, and be forced to go back to a single bed instead of a king-size single. Secondly, definitely a discrimination and division to classes within the community, because the top class will get the happy hour, the others won't.
And do they
the
really feel that?
Community outings will be avoided for the other group, and the ice cream trolley van will only be available to those who are on the top class.
And Peter, is that having? Do they appreciate that? Do they see that? Do they feel that division?
I don't think they can know what it is like until it happens. There's a lot of concern within the home about this.
Mm. Peter, thank you so much, and I'll just finish off with Paul. You work in the sector, is that right?
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. No, there's just 2 points I'd like to make. The first of all is that Standard 6 is very clear of the strength and aged care standards about choice and control in relation to food. It's the food and nutrition standard. I worry about people from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds having their choices of cultural food respected. The second point is that the removal of the televisions and forcing people to hide them should be taken up with the ACCC. It sounds like a form of third line forcing, and I hope the ACCC comes in with a very heavy set of boots and takes to Opal on that matter.
Paul, you sound very informed. So that's Section 6 of the Aged Care Act, is that what?
No, that's Standard 6. Standard 6. The strength and quality standards. There is also Section 24 of the Act, Section 8 or 24, there's a statement of rights, and people should read the statement of rights.
Paul, thank you for calling in. That is a great segue to go back to Lee Falo, who's been standing by very patiently, Professor in Ageing and Health from Sydney Uni. That Paul brings us seamlessly to my final question for you, Lee Fay. Do you suspect that this isn't the end of this matter, that there will be some back and forth about how this particular fee is interpreted?
I think we're going to see more discussion on this. I think your caller Phil made a great point about advocating. If you're seeing this for your loved one, do call on the standards and make sure that whatever your facility is doing is not in breach of the aged care quality standards, for example, around food and nutrition, because older people are meant to have choice and control about the food they get. And if families haven't been consulted, if the residents haven't been consulted and don't have a say, then potentially they're breaching that standard. And that's, I think, a good way of kind of raising your concerns based on the standards.
Lee Fay, thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
That's Lee Fay Lowe, who joined us about this, and you are keeping sending your texts. My mum says Helen gets charged for pillows. The charges are harder to decipher than an energy bill. You make an appointment with the manager, as you're told, to discuss it, and even she cannot untangle it. We will get to more of your texts and calls about this. I want to continue this conversation as we go throughout the hour. But it's coming up to 23 past 11, and next we're going to go to a lovely story, which is about that social connection. This is the good part of aged care in this country, a lovely story about music and social connection for people with dementia and their families.
The piano is back. Join Amanda Keller, Andrea Lamb and Guy Sebastian.
Hello, beautiful people.
Searching for hidden talent and warming our hearts. The brand new season of The Piano. Back Sunday, March 15 on ABC TV and ABC iView.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
And we will continue that conversation about the higher everyday living fees. Your calls and texts are still coming in. I will get to that, but let's also have a lovely story. If you're dealing with dementia, whether you have it or if you're on that journey, if your loved ones have it, you'll know full well that social isolation is a major problem for everyone involved. And it's so important. You've got the medical studies saying that social isolation can actually exacerbate symptoms. So across the country and across the world, really, communities are looking for ways to tackle that isolation. And one of the simplest and most joyful and most effective that they've found is music. So we saw this joyous story and we thought we'd dig into it in Busselton in Western Australia. A dementia-friendly choir called Care Song brings together people living with dementia and their carers each week to sing familiar songs, have a cup of tea, and reconnect with memories and each other. Let's have a little listen to the choir. Oh, yes, and there's a video attached to that. I can tell you the big smiles on the faces. It's a joy to watch. And there was an added bonus because for many, many participants, the lyrics of the songs come back more easily than everyday conversation. The choir was started by local musician David Pilpel, inspired by the joy he saw music bring to his own father during his dementia journey. And he joins me on the line now, along with Barbara Williams, Director of Client Services at Dementia Australia, who works with families across the country, of course, navigating the realities of those conditions. Thank you to both of you for joining me.
Thank you. Good morning, Mary and Barbara.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. First to you, David. Take us inside the room for a moment. What does a typical afternoon at the choir look and feel like?
Well, essentially, we meet every Thursday afternoon at our local senior citizen centre. We start at 1 p.m. and we sing for about an hour, and then we have afternoon tea straight after. We've been averaging about 50 people attending each of our weekly gatherings, and we have a fabulous core of volunteers who've ensured that the whole program runs smoothly, and it's been a fantastic success. We only started in July of last year, and we seem to be going from strength to strength. And in fact, that clip that you just played, we did our first public performance in November of last year at an annual event called Dunsborough Songfest, and we were a great success.
I bet. And, of course, as I said, you started this because music helped your own dad. What did you notice when you played music for him that you made you think this would help others?
Yes, well, my father, who actually passed away in 2024, he was living in a dementia-specific aged care facility in Perth, and I live in Busselton in the southwest of WA, and I used to go up to Perth as often as I could, and I'd always take my ukulele with me. And when I started to play songs that he grew up with, he knew all the words, all the lyrics, and I could just see how much joy and pleasure singing gave him. And invariably there'd be other residents and other families also at this care facility, and they would often join in and sing as well. So it became very much a community choir whenever I went to visit him. And I guess one of the great things about music for people with dementia, even though their memory is very much impaired, when you start playing the music that they grew up with as both children, teenagers and adults, it just brings back fabulous memories for them, as it does for all of us, Mary.
Yeah. It is 28 minutes past 11. You're listening to David Pilpel, who started a choir in WA for people with dementia and their families. And also we are speaking with Barbara from Dementia Australia. Barbara, we'll get to the isolation issue in a moment, that idea of this being so important to be together as a group. But just picking up on something that David said there, why does music seem to work so well for people living with dementia?
It's a really good question. I was just reflecting as David was speaking that my mother, who has now passed, was living in a residential care facility as well. Now, I can't sing, David, so unlike you, I can't play a musical instrument. But I used to take in my son and a portable record player, and we played like Rock Around the Clock and those kinds of things, and my son and I would dance and clap, and my mum would tap her feet and clap, and she'd try and sing along, but she couldn't remember the words. But she came alive when we were doing that. And I think music is something that's ingrained in us from a very early age. You know, I imagine when we're in utero, the heartbeat often sounds quite rhythmic. So I think it's the rhythm of music that connects deeper than our memories, and that's why it is so connecting for people with dementia.
And apart, as I say, from those great moments where you see that connection internally, if you like, that external connection between people, not just for those with dementia but their carers as well, how big a challenge is social isolation?
Oh, it's a huge challenge for people living with dementia, and it's a huge challenge for our older population generally. Research released in 2024 actually identified that social isolation is one of the main risk factors for dementia that can actually be addressed by going out and being active and staying social. But it
not only boosts our brain health and provides a preventative factor against conditions such as dementia, it can actually support the well-being and emotional well-being of people with a diagnosis of dementia. So it it enhances the feel-good hormones in our bodies, it reduces stress, and it just makes us feel connected with others around us in our community.
David, I'll bring you in again.
Sure.
For people who might be searching around, not everyone can start a choir. What would you say to them about this being a form of inspiration for people who are trying to find different creative ways to communicate with loved ones living with dementia? You know, as Barbara was saying then, just sitting in a room playing music can be just as useful. Or what tips would you give for trying to band people together?
Certainly, Mary. I should say that CareSong Busselton is actually an initiative of a WA statewide organisation called Songfest Incorporated. Oh. And one of their main initiatives has been to promote dementia-friendly choirs throughout the state. So for those living in WA, I'd certainly contact. There's a gentleman called Matthew Clements, who's the coordinator of Songfest Incorporated. Mm. And he'd be very keen to hear from anybody looking at starting a dementia friendly sing group, whether it be in Western Australia or anywhere else in our wonderful country.
Barbara Williams, do you believe that these sort of resources are in Victoria as well, where we're broadcasting, or and indeed elsewhere?
Aware of one singing group that exists in Victoria. Dementia Australia offers a program called Dementia Friendly Communities, and we support community organisations to set up things to enhance opportunities for people living with dementia in their community. So there is a musical memories program I'm aware of that is in Boronia in Victoria, but there's probably a lot more out there that we're just not aware of. I think if people are interested in finding out how they might set up one of these and they're unable to access that person that David just mentioned, I think you could call our National Dementia Helpline on 1800 100 500, and we'd be happy to connect you with our Dementia Friendly Communities team and see what support we can provide to you to help you get something set up in your local area.
That's very good advice. A question for both of you to finish off. For families who might be navigating a new dementia diagnosis, what would you want them to know about staying socially connected? David?
Probably Barbara's in a better position to answer that than me. But as both of you have said, when you do care for someone with dementia, it can be a very social isolating experience, and you find that your social network and friendship can often drop off. And I guess one of the great things about this initiative is that we're actually targeting family carers as well, and they really enjoy coming along to our singing groups and meeting other family carers as well, so they realise that they're not the only one going through this experience. But I should say at the same time, a lot of family carers use CareSong Busselton as a form of respite as well, so it gives them a bit of an opportunity to have an afternoon off themselves, and they often get paid carers or other family carers to come in and take their loved one to our singing group. Mm. So it's got lots of benefits both for the person living with dementia and their family carers.
Barbara Williams, it sounds like David's done a pretty good job there. Reach out, essentially, is the answer. Reach out.
Yeah, and I think reach out early. People often think that dementia is just related to memory problems, but they don't understand that it actually impacts our ability to socially engage with others. So, you know, starting straight away or continuing with your existing social activities is really important. We find that some people who are diagnosed with dementia start to avoid social situations as they're worried about how others might treat them or about being embarrassed about making mistakes. So I think if you're living with dementia or you've got a recent diagnosis, just continue living your life, live your best life. If you need support or information on how to do that, please reach out to Dementia Australia. But I think, as David said, the carers need that support and time as well. And we all feel good when we sing, but you don't have to be singing. Any social activity is a great thing.
That is great advice. David Pilpel and Barbara Williams, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you,
Mary.
David Pilpel runs that choir in WA, and Barbara Williams is the Director of Client Services at Dementia Australia. Of course, before that, we were talking about a not-so-great story in many people's views about the implementation of the higher everyday living fee. It's legal. It's legal. It was allowed in the new Aged Care Act that came into effect November last year. We've heard of one very large, the largest provider, Opal Healthcare, that's trialling it in four facilities, and it makes a two-class system, as it's been described, of menus, fewer hot food options, no free-to-air TV if you can't pay up. Very soon, we'll be talking to the CEO of the Ageing Victoria Council of Australia, or the Council of Ageing Victoria.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Craig says, Mary, how is this client-centred? Did we not just have a royal commission? This is atrocious and the government must fix it immediately. This on text as well. My heart just breaks at how awful our society is coming. The sense of care and duty towards others is disappearing. Such corporate greed is going on. That gives you a little bit of the taste of the feedback we're getting here this morning from you. I'd love to keep hearing from you. But joining me now is Ben Rogers, CEO of Council of the Ageing Victoria and Seniors Rights Victoria. Sorry for mangling your title before, Ben. Hello.
Hello, Mary. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. What do you think of what we've learned about this particular trial?
I mean, look, we definitely don't consider it to be in line with what we intended to be achieved through the aged care reforms, and I think the community response reflects that. You know, I think it's all well and good being able to pay for, you know, higher extras, and, you know, that's absolutely something that should be enabled through the system, but absolutely there are some key items there that, you know, we'd really see as being almost quite basic, you know, especially being able to access, you know, hot meals at breakfast, which, you know, especially I think we've had a conversation in this country before, particularly about what does nutrition for older people in our aged care homes feature. And that's so, so important. So we really are concerned that older Victorians through this are maybe missing out on some key aspects that we think are essential to ageing well.
Mm. Opal Healthcare, for its part, is not taking interviews, but it is it's issued a statement that basically says, look, this is legal. This is here to give choice to people who can pay for it, and points us towards the fact that it was introduced in the new Aged Care Act last year. We had a talkback caller who works in the industry, Ben, who got in touch with us, who said he wondered whether it breached the standards that are in place. From your point of view, how legal or not legal or challengeable are these fees?
I think it's definitely fair to say that they're absolutely legal. And, you know, we've questioned whether they're an ethos with what the reforms were meant to achieve. And that's why, particularly with this being a trial, I think it's incumbent on us to have this conversation, you know, Victoria, nationally, as a sector, to go, well, what should this look like? You know, maybe this trial needs to change before perhaps it's taken to all of Opal Healthcare's, you know, sites, and whether other aged care providers start to look into it to make sure that it's actually fair and reasonable in the circumstances.
I guess we've been talking this morning about things that people might consider, you know, reasonable to be charged for within a facility that, you know, a neighbour won't consider that they're losing out if they, for instance, choose not to pay. Can you give us some examples? Is there a set of examples that you could give that you think is just a bottom line of what is reasonable standard care?
In terms of the items that have been presented that Opal Healthcare have considered as part of their higher everyday living package?
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, look, the one that immediately stands out, as I've already mentioned, is the daily hot breakfast, especially when we're considering, you know, nutrition and supporting healthy aging. The other part that I think is really important is around access to Wi-Fi. You know, I think having basic access to Wi-Fi in this day and age, I would consider as being quite basic. This is not necessarily higher, you know, bandwidth or quicker speeds. This is, you know, essential basic options to staying in touch with people in your own room, which is really your own space within an aged care facility. And so I think we really need to be careful about making sure that people can continue to have that contact and access that Wi-Fi enables in this digital age, even in their own rooms.
Well, and what about the free-to-air TV? We had one person calling us saying, you know, their parent would be devastated if they didn't have it.
I think, again, when we were initially looking at these reforms, the discussion focused on paid TV. Back when the conversation was around the legislation, the reforms, what was meant, it was really focused on paid TV. And I think access to that free-to-air TV especially is essential to enabling people to stay engaged, stay connected. And I think the stories around having TVs screwed off walls, I think, that would be a horrible experience for someone to go through when they're already in quite a vulnerable position.
Ben Rogers, will you be taking this up with the federal government?
We'll absolutely continue to engage with the federal government and with Dakotas across the state, territories and nationally to make sure that these issues around how older people are experiencing these reforms, because again, this is occurring at a time of, great tumult as we sort of go through what these means. We continue to advocate for older Victorians and older Australians to make sure these reforms deliver on their promise. It's not something we can let it slide. We have to make sure they deliver a better aged care system.
Ben Rogers, thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot for having me.
That's Ben Rogers, CEO of Council of the Ageing Victoria and Senior Rights Victoria. Pam says, everyone must feel as outraged as I feel right now. What a perfectly rotten thing to do. The almighty dollar wins again, does it? We will get to more of your calls and texts, if I can, within this hour, because so many are coming through. But let's change gears just a little bit. We've got a sporting cheat sheet for you. All you need to know about Super Netball, because its 10th season comes to life tomorrow night, to give us a quick expert snapshot of what we can expect and also to reflect on a decade of the Super Netball, is Bianca Chatfield, former Diamond netballer and Fox Sports netball commentator. Hi, Bianca.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. 10, that's a milestone.
I know, isn't it? And I, have strong memories of being a part of, the start of Suncourt Super Netball and what it was all going to look like and how different it was going to be. And I think it's really, come of age. How it started to where it is now has been remarkable, I think, how much it's grown and just how captivated all the netball fans are when it's on, and people miss it so much when we're in that off season.
Exactly. In fact, let's go to the history of it first, a little bit of a sort of a highlights and lowlights list, I guess, before we get to what we can expect this year. I mean, I remember reporting on the start of Super Netball, and the highlight of it really was a new level of professionalism and financial growth, particularly for the players.
That's right. And previous to that, it was the ANZ Championship. So if we can remember back, there was 5 Australian teams and 5 New Zealand teams. And that competition in itself was really successful, but owned partly by Australia and partly by New Zealand. Mm. And then there was a lot of, complex issues around the strength of the 5 New Zealand teams. They probably, would they consider putting 2 or 3 teams in the league instead of 5? And Australia being out to add their own. But, credit to Netball Australia at the time, because they made that brave move to break away from Netball New Zealand and start their own comp, even though they had seen such success, and really own it all themselves. And so now the 8 teams are all here in Australia, and it's attracted so many of the players around the world, because there is no import limit for teams. And that's controversial in itself, but we have, basically we've created the best competition in the world here in Australia. Everyone wants to be a part of it. And from that, the professionalism obviously has kept growing. The players are employed now for 12 months, for the entire year. And that's really also just changed the game, because, the work that the players do outside of that is really, they don't have to do as much to be able to live that full-time athlete life. So I think it was a great move by Netball Australia back then, brave and courageous at the time, because no one really knew how it was going to go.
But now we're a powerful behemoth. So, yeah, we're sucking all of the imports in. We'll talk about the imports we're going to get this year soon. But also, just in terms of, if we're looking back, there have been some rocky times for Netball Australia. There was a financial crisis a few years ago. That seems to be back on track.
Yeah, it does. It certainly has been quite tumultuous at different times. And it, comes down to obviously just the collective bargaining agreements with the players and, certain sponsorships in the past. So I think you've got to have those tension points, and you don't want them to boil over to become big media and news stories. But each time we've had those moments in time, like, the sport's definitely grown from an administration point of view, and also from the players and understanding what's important for the league to survive and be the best that it can be. It doesn't always necessarily mean that more money has to go directly to the players straight away. It's about the resources they have around them. And so I think at the moment, and especially having Liz Ellis in as the chair, it's been much more harmonious in the last few years and much more productive, I feel, in where we've been able to get to.
It's 11:45. And of course, you're listening to Bianca Chatfield, legend, former Diamond netballer and Fox Sports netball commentator. We're talking about Super Netball starting tomorrow night. And you have said, Bianca, that this is going to be the most unpredictable season yet. Why is that?
Yeah, it definitely feels like that. You know, when you've got to put in your tips about who you think is going to win, and I just feel like we're all meant to be experts, but we really have no idea how this season is going to play out there.
Oh, come on. You might get docked close for that. You've got to...
Yeah, I know, exactly.
You know exactly what's going to happen.
I wish I did, but last year was a surprise, really, in the end, how Vixens managed to do it and steal that grand final.
Oh, so dramatic.
Unbelievable. And, you know, none of us, I don't think, would have predicted that one. So hopefully it's another brilliant season like that.
Okay, so we have got a lot of imports. Is that right?
Lots of imports. Definitely, you know, we've got our Jamaicans that, you know, have been and lit the fire in this competition for sure. But this year we're seeing a whole influx of New Zealand players coming over. So, you know, 10 years ago when they used to be part of the league, they then got restricted and they weren't allowed to be part of Super Netball. That would basically relinquish their opportunity to represent the Silver Ferns if they came across and played in Super Netball. So they haven't ever been allowed to come over here, and a couple have broken the mould recently, and that's caused an influx this year. And New Zealand have really had to say you can come across. There's mm-hmm. certain criteria around it, but they're allowed to come across and I think still represent their country, because it's only actually going to make them better players and better development for the Silver Ferns. So could be to our detriment that we're allowing them all into, but I think it's only going to add more excitement to each team. And there's 9 New Zealanders coming across as well. So it'll be interesting times and see what flair they bring to the sides.
Okay, Bianca, you have to earn that wage. You're going to have to make a call. Who do you reckon is going to take it out this year?
I really think the Vixens will be up there again, but I think the Thunderbirds are going to be the ones that take it out in the end. The Adelaide Thunderbirds have been supreme the last few years, but they've got Shamira Sterling-Humphrey back in defence after having her baby last year, and they've got a gun shooter, Elmarae Vanderburg from South Africa, who's come over as well, and I think she is only going to get better every game she plays this season.
Bianca Chatfield says, Thunderbirds, that must hurt being a dual Vixens Premiership captain. Thank you so much for giving us that cheat sheet as we head into Super Netball season tomorrow night.
No worries. Thanks very much.
Bianca Chatfield, of course, former Diamond. Karen says, she's from Preston, saying, thanks for talking about the netball. Looking so forward to the season. Go Vixens. Love, Bianca. Yep. Go Vixens and love, Bianca. I agree as well. You know what else is coming up? The Oscars, the movies, Night of Nights. I want to know how it all works. How do these votes work? Monday morning local time is when the 98th Academy Awards will be held. And we have recently had those questions. If Timothée Chalamet could still win because he made those controversial comments about ballet and opera. If you didn't know, he said he didn't want to be working in there because you have to convince people that, you know, that they're worthwhile. That copped a wave of protest, of course, from the very worthy people who say, surely this means his Oscar chances have gone downhill. But it got me curious about how the whole process works, because didn't they vote a few months ago? Associate Professor Liam Burke is Cinema and Screen Studies Discipline Leader at Swinburne and joins me now. Hi, Liam.
Hi, how are you doing, Mary?
Yeah, good, thank you. Let's start first. Is it Timothy or Timothée?
It's Timothy Chalamet.
Just
but
Timothy.
I think he's lovingly known as Timmy. So online, everyone talks about Timmy and what Timmy is up to this time.
Okay, let's just call him Timmy. Has Timmy shot himself in the foot with these comments? Will they have an impact on the Oscars in particular?
No, zero, because voting closed on the 5th of March. So despite all the excitement online, and this is true of many things, it doesn't actually have any impact in the real world.
Because they vote months out, don't they?
Well, it's a two-phase process. So they start months out with their respective areas. So if you're an actor, you'll vote on the actors, cinematographer, production designer, and that's how we get the nominees. And then the whole body gets to vote across all categories. So the final votes on the five shortlisted Best Actor actors. In this case, that was done on the 5th of March before he made his controversial comments about opera.
While we're on that topic, there was also some, he said, this will be 14 cents, he said, in his ratings. How much of an impact do you think that those comments will make? What did you observe about it as a, you know, cinema and screen studies leader? He wasn't wrong, was he? He was saying cinema is more popular.
I mean, cinema is more popular, and it's easy to take a comment like that out of context. He probably could have chosen his words more carefully. But I mean, cinema, much like opera, is kind of becoming something of a, not a dying art form, but a rarefied art form. If you take the Oscars in the late 90s would have had 55 million viewers in America. They haven't broken 20 million in the last couple of years. And there's lots of reasons for that, the arrival of streaming. But a key factor is a lot of the movies aren't movies that people go see. 1998, that was Titanic. A couple of years later, you would have films like Gladiator, The Lord of the Rings, Chicago. Mm. In the last few years, we've had these indie films, very good films, like Anora, like Nomadland, that, you know, half a dozen people probably saw before they ever got awards attention. And therefore, there isn't the same investment in watching the ceremony that there has been in generations past.
Are you saying that blockbusters are really the foundational a part of the Oscars, that you cannot have those independent films and have a successful Oscars?
Well, there has been this kind of, since streaming, this splitting between blockbuster and like a drama. If you think back to the 90s and the early 2000s, a film like Good Will Hunting could become a blockbuster. Whereas now when we think blockbuster, we tend to think more action adventure, sci-fi, superhero movies. And the on the other hand, lives these sort of art house indie films. And there isn't the same, you know, courtroom dramas, there isn't the same romantic comedies, there aren't the same kind of films that, you know, let's say for grown-ups, those types of stories have tended to go for streaming. And so, you know, you get films like The Brutalist or something that, you know, not a huge number of people would have seen that get nominated for Best Picture. And if you haven't seen the films in the race, then you might not be as invested in the outcome. This year's a little different though, because we do have some actual genuine hits in the as front runners.
Yes, I always like the Golden Globes because it gets those, as I think Amy Poehler once described it, rat-faced TV people in the same room as the gorgeous movie stars. And we're much more likely to have seen the rat-faced TV people. You're listening to Associate Professor Liam Burke about the Oscars coming up next week. People would be asking you, Liam, you know, who your winners will be, who your tips for winners will be, and I'm probably going to ask you that too. But how much can you actually hazard a guess on that based, for instance, on the previous awards like the Golden Globes or the BAFTAs? Does that still follow?
It does and it doesn't. The first thing to remember is the voting body for those precursor awards doesn't overlap massively with the Academy. So say for the Academy's, the Oscars, has about 10,500 members across all areas. So from acting, directing to production design. By comparison, the Screen Actors Guild Awards has 125,000 people. So there's not a lot of overlap between them. Having said that, if you do well at those precursor awards and you endear yourself and build a bit of a narrative, then that can give you momentum. So a shoo-in this year would be Jessie Buckley for Best Actress for Hamnet. And she has sort of endeared herself, you know, at the Golden Globes and at the SAGs and at various other precursor awards. And the momentum seems to be with her.
So the schmoozing counts. So it's Jessie Buckley, that's your the Best Actress. Who's Best Actor?
Best Actor, that is more up in the air. So Timothée Chalamet has been nominated three times in recent years, Bob Dylan and Call Me By Your Name. So it kind of feels like it's his time. But weirdly, young men don't win Oscars. So, you know, DiCaprio had to wait decades. Pacino had to wait decades. So he, if he gets it, will only be the second youngest actor ever to win it. So there tends to be a bit of a bias there. So they may go for a legacy award winner like Ethan Hawke, who's never won, but has been nominated several times. I still think Timmy will put it out of the bag, though.
Ah, okay. Liam says, Timmy, I'd go for Ethan Hawke. I like a bit of reverse ageism. I think that's cool. And before I let you go, Liam, what about the decision to book Conan O'Brien as host? How do you sort of read that in terms of what they're aiming for?
quite a sensible move in a very divided America. So a lot of the talk show hosts like Stephen Colbert, like Jimmy Kimmel, have become much more outspoken, much more political than their predecessors like Jay Leno would have been. Whereas Conan O'Brien, his comedy tends to be more silly. It's definitely never political. So in a very charged time, that kind of apolitical comedy will go well. He also has a supporting role in If I Had Legs, I Could Kick You. He doesn't normally, which is the Rose Byrne movie. So he actually has a horse in the race as well, which I think they'll probably get a little bit of fun out of.
I also should ask you, best film?
Best film will probably be One Battle After Another. If not, it'll be Sinners. Both films come from Warner Brothers, which is the first time that's happened in 50 years. So no matter what happens, Warner Brothers, which is due to be bought by Skydance Corporation, will be happy.
That's a whole other conversation. Liam, thank you for joining us today.
No problem. Take care.
That's Associate Professor Liam Burke, Cinema and Screen Studies Discipline Leader at Swinburne. For all of us who might be looking out for, well, the red carpet potentially, but also those winners on Monday morning, thank you for joining me today on the Conversation Hour. We have had so many texts and I am seeing those. I think this is a conversation that's going to keep going about the higher everyday living fee that Opal Healthcare is trialling in 4 aged care facilities. Diane has said, what happened to respect? Instead of caring and nurturing our elders, we're having discussions about how much we can take away from them before it's illegal. Sometimes I'm ashamed of this country's selfishness. And also Joe says, it sounds like a breach of contract. As we know, we ABC will continue to have a look at this. This is a matter of interpretation of the new part of the new aged care law. Put in last year in November. Thank you for joining me on the Conversation Hour. Thank you to Amber Ross and John for helping me in the chair this week.